The views expressed on ExoPolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are those of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of 1480 KPHX or our sponsors.
Welcome back. This is ExoPolitics Radio, KPHX Phoenix, 1480 AM, Nova M Radio Network. We're 1480kphx.com. Our audio archives are at www.exopoliticsradio.com. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. This week we have a groundbreaking program with Jim Sparks, anthropologist extraordinaire from other dimensions, with his book, The Keepers, An Alien Message for the Human Race, foreword by Dr. John E. Mack, prologue by Linda Moulton Howe. And Jim will be telling us about an extraordinary extraterrestrial species that is doing double duty. Number one, it has carrying out a top-secret sequestered human extraterrestrial liaison program with the black budget military intelligence sector of the United States government. Secondly, simultaneously, this specific extraterrestrial species has been carrying out an outreach genetic farming education program with specifically chosen or targeted human individuals, and Jim Sparks has experienced both of these. Please stay tuned. Welcome back. This is ExoPolitics Radio, and I'm your host, Alfred Weber, with an official ExoPolitics Radio commentary. And the commentary was given rise by our special guest, Jim Sparks, the author of the book, The Keepers, An Alien Message for the Human Race, with a foreword by the late Dr. John E. Mack, founder and director of the John Mack Institute at Harvard University, and prologue by Linda Moulton Howe, who has also written an introduction to the book Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. Jim Sparks' book deals with 18 years' experiences of having been taken into what Dr. John Mack calls a kind of an alien boot camp, that is taken into an extraterrestrial outreach program. And I sort of has characterized his book as, quote, an anthropology field report on a genuine outreach program by a species of extraterrestrials. And I find there's a lot of different opinions on this book, and it seems to me to reflect the diversity of experience that humans have about the extraterrestrial phenomenon itself. The interview with Jim Sparks and his book confirms or gives reason to confirm or some supportive evidence of a secret extraterrestrial human liaison program that's ongoing with the United States government, probably in highly secret sequestered CIA, U.S. Army intelligence black budget programs that has resulted in giving entry-level time travel teleportation technology to the U.S. government, which we shall learn they may have used and may have misapplied, using it for purposes of political control rather than straight scientific application, for example, in the public arena, in terms of a transportation method for the human race that would be non-polluting and really futuristic and fun, such as any ethical beings would use it. Simultaneously, we will learn that this species of extraterrestrials simultaneously being in the carrying out a secret extraterrestrial human liaison program, they were simultaneously carrying out an outreach program with humans. And that was the outreach program in which Jim Sparks was being what he calls pulled, that is, pulled through various dimensions very rapidly and taken to kind of an alien schooling. Now, he's unusual in that he has almost complete recall of these. And what's unusual in the interview, which you'll see through the questioning and in preparation for this, and this is why I give credence to his story, unlike some of the other radio shows in this area, which I think take sort of a stock approach to this story in the old school of consciousness, is that his story is consistent with other whistleblower reports that we have of top secret human extraterrestrial liaison programs, which have given time travel teleportation technology to the U.S. government, which has in turn misused it. And when we pointed out to Jim, as you'll see in the interview, who said, hey, gee, it looks like you were in a program which simultaneously had an outreach phase and a contract phase with the U.S. government, kind of a programmatic phase. He said, yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's because we had been familiar. And so the fact that his, what we call anthropology field reports, are consistent with other whistleblowers, that we do give a great deal of credence in these anthropology field reports. So I think it's a very unusual book. It's called The Keepers, and you may want to read it as kind of anthropology field reports in the study of exopolitics. These extraterrestrials are different from, for example, the Nordic extraterrestrials, who you may recall in an earlier Exopolitics Radio episode, Dr. Michael Sala, our exopolitics commentator, describes as reportedly meeting with President Dwight Eisenhower on February 20th, 1954, in a secret meeting. Apparently there were others there, other witnesses such as Catholic archbishops and other cultural leaders. And these extraterrestrial ambassadors asked for an immediate halt in the U.S. nuclear weapons development program on the grounds that it would hurt not only humans, not only the Earth's ecology, but it would hurt the galactic and universal ecology as well. Of course, the U.S. responded by going forward with the Bravo test 9 days later of a 15-megaton weapon. And it was just at about that time that the outreach and the secret extraterrestrial human liaison program described by Jim Sparks, although he was a later participant, may have gotten started. You know, there are many unusual features which are consistent with other descriptions by whistleblowers, including the ability for interdimensional travel, for actually being in multiple dimensions at once, sort of anchored in the fifth dimension and manifesting in this third dimension at the same time, invisibility, the ability aboard a craft to scan an individual and sort of scan back and forth between your lifetimes, to go through a technology and, you know, trace you back to see what your prior lifetimes were. You know, here we have to do it through hypnotic regression or these other techniques like psychic regression to go back through your prior lives. And Sparks also describes when he is, quote, being pulled, that is, being taken, what they call normally abducted, but it's being pulled through multiple dimensions very rapidly into the spaceship environment, kind of the mothership or dimensional environment. He passes through many dimensions that he sees very quickly, in which humans are kind of in a freeze frame mode, including humans that appear to be dead or between lives. And so this is sort of like being pulled through the upper and lower fourth dimension, what we normally call the astral planes or heaven and hell, or, you know, each religion has a different term for it. The Catholics have abolished limbo, so I guess limbo doesn't exist in the astral planes anymore, although we wouldn't know. This is the era of the integration of spirituality and science, so this is all part of it. So the interesting point is that all of this provides such integration and consistency between what whistleblowers are saying, what advanced extraterrestrial science says, what advanced spiritual science says, and what our own spiritual and parapsychological sciences are advancing here on Earth. So, having said that, I'd like to turn to one final matter which we have touched on in previous programs, and that's the issue of disclosure and amnesty. And on page 201 of his book, Jim Sparks says, our exopolitical situation, because of the intensity of the cover-up of information relating to these topics, we cannot know exactly what has gone on between the visitors and our governments. And he goes on there, he says, I have concluded that there are three governing levels within our government. One, the U.S. government that the people deal with at face value. This government knows nothing about these topics. In other words, extraterrestrials and the secret human extraterrestrial liaison programs. Two, the government that covers up information about the alien presence. This government thinks it knows what's going on and stumbles its way around. Three, the secret club or black budget boys. This government has been around since day one, controls this topic, and the other two governments do not know it exists. In order to protect secrecy and national security, information was suppressed using criminal acts. This is why individuals in the secret government sector do not come forward. The criminal justice system would simply crucify them unless they were granted complete amnesty in exchange for the complete truth. That way, and only that way, can the truth be told. Once it is out, we can use the technologies the way they were intended to be used and work together to fix the environmental crisis facing our planet. So, Jim Sparks here confirms, on the advice of the extraterrestrials themselves, who have been involved, number one, in super secret extraterrestrial human liaison programs with the U.S. government, simultaneously in outreach programs with humans, such as Jim Sparks and many others. The Roper poll claims that 33% of North Americans who believe in abductions either have been abducted or know someone who has been abducted. And what Jim Sparks in his book says is that there are many benefits that have come from this, one of which may be indigo children and star kids. So what he's saying is that the only way that the technology will be released, because there's been so much criminality by the U.S. government since the beginning of these programs in terms of the disinformation and crimes from day one, by the secret government programs involved in suppressing the truth. Yours truly came in contact with them during the Carter administration when I was director of the proposed Jimmy Carter 1977 extraterrestrial communication study. And that's all in my disclosure project affidavit. Yep, they're crimes committed. There's no question about that. And so what the extraterrestrials proposed to Jim Sparks, which Jim Sparks says, with an amnesty program, and we've discussed this on Exopolitics Radio, that even though all of these other countries are coming forth with the opening, France, England, Chile, Brazil, Mexico, in the United States, there may not be full disclosure until amnesty is actually given. And one formula for amnesty which has worked is something like the South Africa Truth Amnesty Commission, which worked under Nelson Mandela at the end of the apartheid regime. Now, what more criminal and what more war crimes and crimes against humanity than the apartheid regime? And the basic formula for that was that individuals who had committed crimes, that tortured people, killed people, etc., as members of the South African secret police, if they came forward under oath and declared their crimes in public, they would be given amnesty. And thus, there was a basic social reconciliation under the principles of what we call restorative justice, which is a basic indigenous principle that here in Canada, under restorative justice, they take First Nations, Native American principles of restorative justice, in which the community is brought back to balance when the criminal actually confesses in front of the community, and there's a restoration of the balance. So that's some of the wisdom that the extraterrestrials have been sharing with us, because it is a fact that the U.S. government and the individuals within it did misapply and did engage in criminal acts which were not authorized by the extraterrestrials as part of these liaison programs. Now, stay tuned for a very, very interesting interview with Jim Sparks, author of The Keepers, An Alien Message for the Human Race. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. This is Exopolitics Radio, KPHX, Phoenix, 1480 AM, Nova M Radio, 1480kphx.com. Our audio archives are at www.exopoliticsradio.com. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Today, we have our special guest with an extraordinary book, The Keepers, An Alien Message for the Human Race by Jim Sparks, with a foreword by the late Dr. John E. Mack and a prologue by Linda Moulton Howe. And I'll just read a brief passage by Jim Sparks that will give you an essence of his book. Are there visitors from other realms attempting to preserve our planet? If so, why? And here's Jim Sparks. I believe they have been farming us for raw materials, but now there's a problem, and their investment is in trouble. The aliens have spent a lot of time, travel, and effort to farm us, but we are on an almost irreversible path of self-destruction. If we environmentally destroy ourselves, the aliens still have an excellent insurance policy. They've been collecting seeds from plants, animals, and humans. Through semen and ova extraction, the aliens can start us or other Earth life all over again here or somewhere else. Jim, welcome back to Exopolitics Radio.
It's great to be back. Thank you.
Great. Well, you know, there's a particular chapter in your book called Diamond in the Sky, where the diamond refers to, if I get it right, what initially appears to be a diamond shape, and this becomes a ship, and then you actually end up in a circle of extraterrestrial beings, and an extraordinary message is given to you. I think that's where the subtitle of the book comes, An Alien Message for the Human Race. And what I'd like to do is just to read briefly from some parts of that message and maybe have a conversation about it and see from your insights and from the experience of your 18 years of interaction what conclusions and what suggestions you've come to. He says, I notice that each alien seems to be concentrating and communicating on transmitting his thoughts to the creature to my left. This is a circle of beings of which you're a part at a carnival ground that's empty. They seem to be of like mind, as though combining their consciousness into one telepathic voice. They continued, quote, there are some things you need to understand. Yes, it's true that we have been in contact with your government and heads of power. It is also true that agreements have been made and kept secret from your people. It is also true that in the past, some of your people have lost their lives or have been badly hurt to protect this secret. Our hands had no part in this. We contacted your leaders because your planet is in grave trouble. Your leader said the vast majority of your planet were not ready for anything like this, so we made time agreements with your leaders as to when your people would be made aware of your presence. This part of the agreement has not at all been kept. It was also agreed in the meantime steps would be taken to correct the environmental condition of your planet with our advice and technology. We say advice because we respect the fact that this is your planet, not ours. They also broke this agreement. Okay, so those are fairly direct words. And I wonder, sort of in a very kind of open, you know, alien-centered way or ET-centered way, if you could share with us what your thoughts are about what they were saying and how you think this message to the human race should be heard.
There was a lot of things that had taken place in that period that were phenomenal and out of character for the routine abduction or the pulling scenarios that I had gone through for year after year after year after year. For starters, 95 to 97 or 98% of interaction had been with what are commonly referred to as grays and the worker beings, supervisors in rank and so forth. What made this unusual, it was a 2-3 week period, as I recall, that different things were taking place. For starters, it was 6-7 years after the initial abduction. There was a mass, one particular mass abduction experience where hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of human beings were put before monitors on this huge ship and got environmental lessons on the planet. This is when things were really evolving, going from, punishment, reward, and everything, as I mentioned earlier, and how it was, to a mass abduction where I was free to roam around board and see this. So that was on the part of the grays. I had no clue, no inkling, no understanding, no sightings, no interaction whatsoever with these, what people commonly refer to this other species of extraterrestrial as, I believe they're referred to as reptilian. I only concurred with that to the point where they have scales and they look that way. Okay, so it's got to be the same thing. After that mass abduction where I was seeing a huge agenda, which was your planet is dying, you're killing your planet, and that was a campaign of the grays, and that was my only interaction. I was driving down the road and, I saw a diamond-shaped craft. I was by myself, and there was a clear telepathic message. Now I'm seeing these things outwardly in the middle of broad daylight. And that's what took place in this 2-3 week period. First, there was this diamond-shaped ship, clear as clear can be. It telepathically, and I think it was almost like a beacon message, it said, the keepers are here, the keepers are here to take their people home to a better place. Meaning that I could see in my head, it was transmitted in my head, the craft was collecting seeds of animals, plants, ova, semen, everything of nature that you can think of. Within about a week or so of that period, I was walking down the beach where I was living at the time. Another diamond-shaped ship appeared, and it wasn't just for myself, but other people standing around watch us enter the atmosphere. In my eyes and in my mind at that time, whatever these crafts were associated with what I would refer to as grays. Then something strikingly different took place, which was this meeting. And this interaction was the first interaction with these beings. The first thing that was very different was their technology. So I can tell you that the technology that the reptilians use, and I can tell you that the technology that the grays use to transport matter from point A to point B are different. For starters, with the reptilian technology, to go from point A to point B was extremely gentle on your system. I had blacked out in the beginning stages of being transported, but when I came to, I actually could see myself looking down at the ground as to where point B was going to be before we got there. I had blacked out again. When I came to, I was standing up, I was fully mobile, and before I opened my eyes, I was standing, but I was completely conscious, but there was a voice already talking to me in my head as if there was some ongoing conversation to where we're going to lead to now prior to me being conscious of the conversation. So I was conscious of a conversation as I came to, yet I still couldn't see. As they were directing statements and sentences into my head and I opened my eyes where I could see, they had projected a human face on top of this face, not to scare me, which was the first time ever I had seen these, what I could refer to as keepers, even the greys in that sense, but as these reptilian beings. They were huge. Their foreheads protruded over their eyes as if the cognitive part of their brain was extremely expanded, but lumpy, giant broad shoulders and scales. But everything about them was different. And the first one of the first words that were coming to me was what they said was, "We would have just given it to you, but you had to earn it." And I knew exactly what they meant when they said it, because that 6-7 years of, again, that interaction, or the what John referred to as military boot camp, but as that learning process, had to happen in order to have this kind of interaction where one could stand there and face these beings and not be scared. It was a semicircle, as you said. I guesstimate there to be anywhere from 10 to a dozen of them, and they were all transmitting their thoughts on one individual. The gist of it was exactly as you quoted, that these agreements were broken. Primarily, they did the right thing, which was to go to powerheads and leaders and global leaders and so forth who influenced the globe, that the environment, you know, is in trouble, and here's some technology to take care of it. And we broke those agreements primarily because of greed and weapons, and that's exactly what we did with it. They went on to say that the average person would be contacted, and so they're going to, in other words, they're in a sense, they're going over the heads of the people that are in control. Now, the average person, the way I see it, and the way things have progressed over the years, which is, it's, I find phenomenal, is that people are, I think, strategically located around the globe, the average person. They get interaction with these beings, whether they have fragmented memories in these abductions, whether they have more than fragmented, or perhaps they don't have any. It's all of an environmental nature. And what I'm seeing happening here, and a lot of this came from this interaction too, is the fact that we're reaching a point of what one might call critical mass, where it's a chain reaction, where this person involves that person involves this one, involves this power head, and I'm seeing more people coming together in that respect. They were very, very kind. They expressed concern, and for the reason I'm saying this is because all the first 6-7 years of dealing with the extraterrestrials was very cold and not emotional in that learning process, and now there was true interaction. There was a couple of things that they came out with that were extremely strong, and the message was extremely strong. We've got a lot of problems here on the planet. We've got nuclear weapons. We've got biological weapons. We've got the global warming. My assignment, which was given to me, If I choose to accept it, which I did, which is I focus on the rainforest, there was a reminder of that issue. And what would it take in order to solve these problems? This is where amnesty came into place. Now, this is not Jim Sparks' idea with this amnesty. This thing with amnesty was nothing that I even considered in my mind. I had no clue about any amnesty program anybody else would have. And if you know me, and if you don't, in the case that you don't know Jim Sparks, I read little to no material, almost zero material, other books on the subject. I go to zero to no movies when it comes to things like this, and I want to, believe me. It's not the cloud, my experiences, or what I was told with others. So I keep a message that I got as clear face-to-face as one as possible so I can share it this way, raw. And according to them, we've got highly secret black op, secret government organizations, not just in the United States, but us being the pretty much the heart of it, but globally, that have maimed, murdered, discredited individuals for many years, all for the sake of national security. There is a growing majority of individuals, a growing majority in these secret governments or secret ops, sanctioned or not sanctioned. Their hearts, for the most part, are in the right place. Their hearts, for the most part, are in the best interest of the country, as their sworn duty is as what they swore to and what they have to adhere to. But the growing majority knows that a lot of the technologies that they harbor are what's going to make or break the difference on this globe. These are technologies that would, where we wouldn't have to spend 1/100th of what we take from this planet. The ability for that free, non-polluting energy. The ability to go from point A to point B without time passing. Medical technologies that are anywhere from 60 to hundreds of years ahead of their time relative to what we have now. The biggest problem that we have as a human species, one of the biggest problems that the human species has, is our lifespans are way, way too short. This is not coming from Jim Sparks. This is coming, again, from minds that think that process data 10 to 100 times faster, continuous memory, retain things for thousands, if not tens of thousands of years. They were able to evolve past many, many things for this reason. So there's technologies out there that will expand the human lifespan so we can evolve. But what is it going to take to get these technologies out, which is an easy thing? Another thing about these guys is they're so intelligent, there's so much experience, there's so much data, there's so much they know, yet their responses to solutions are so simple, and you got to stand back sometimes and go, well, gosh, that just sounds too easy. Well, gee, you don't really need to live an entire human lifespan to know that the path of least resistance to produce something that's good is probably the best one to take. Amnesty, 100%.
Right. This rings a chord because the amnesty approach was, at the human level, successful, for example, well, insofar as things can be, in the South Africa Truth Commission amnesty process. And it's been very successful. So, you know, I can see what you're saying about the simplest solutions make sense.
Yeah, and it's not an easy thing to do. Is it for spiritual reasons? Is it for practical reasons? I would say more leaning on the practicality. If you have 100% total forgivable amnesty under any and all circumstances, in a sense, it's like a bankruptcy. I'm not saying bankruptcy is a great thing or a good thing, but in some cases it could save people's lives. But in a sense it is, where all of these things can be on the table with absolute zero recourse, because they were clear, when I say they, I'm talking about the scaled ones or the reptilians, whatever you want to call them, the extraterrestrials, the evolved non-human intelligent species from other places and dimensions, were the fact that that would be absolutely necessary and what it would take. And it makes a lot of sense. Now, there's another area, and I've evolved myself personally as I go on with this, which is the focus. There has been a lot of focus with these guys on the rainforest. It moved me to form a foundation. It is in its dormant state. You cannot contact it yet. There's not a website for it, but I formed it roughly within months of this message, and it's in dormant, and I'm going to bring it back to life, and it's called Your Earth. Your Earth, Y-O-U-R Earth. But the point is, why was there such a focus on the environmental issue? Why in particular the rainforest? Only here, as of lately, has there been interaction with more of a reason why, so, other than the fact that it's the lungs of the planet and it cleanses the planet and so on. It's a global purpose, a hands-on purpose. It's something that the human race can physically see change. I'm not dismissing the importance of the ocean and cleaning up the seas. I'm not dismissing the importance of global warming and the things we need to do. That's all part of it, if not more. But why this focus on the rainforest? Well, for starters, this is coming from them, and I don't think you mind me sharing it. It's something that you can see physically recede. And it's right. An awful thing. The thrashing and the burning, we can see that. Okay, so there's some steps that were outlined to me, and these aren't the detailed steps, but here's the broad steps. The first step is to explain just what I just said. Something we can see. We buy the property. The world owns the property. That's the first thing outlined. We buy the property. Now, this is coming from them, because when you own something, you have ownership and you have owner's rights, and you have the right to protect it. The people that are thrashing and burning need to be taken care of on a global, hands-on way, meaning that there's a reason they're tearing up that land. There's a reason they're going in there and they're planting these crops. They're not rotating the crops. They're building unsuitable shelter. And as soon as they can't grow anymore, they go and thrash and burn some more, and it goes on and on and on. I don't have to tell you. Those individuals, we need to address them and take care of them. The fourth thing handed down in this was where are the incentives to rebuild the rainforest so it can replenish itself? The same individuals who are thrashing and burning as an incentive to be a part of replenishing the rainforest of the globe, they get a big, huge plot of land with equitable housing and growable land that they can grow food on or animals, whatever they want to do. So as an incentive to bringing it back, those individuals get a plot of land outside of the forest, of course. Then at the same token, now this involves the globe. When you involve the globe in something that we can see, instead of regression of the rainforest, we can see it come back to health. We could see it taking back geography again, and land, and building, and growing. It's a total hands-on thing, and for the first time in the history of the human species, it's something that the globe has done together that we can physically see its full positive effect, which will make these other issues that we have to tackle, environmentally speaking and other issues, something not so foreboding, something not so much challenging, because for the first time we've accomplished this. All in combination with the amnesty, getting out the technologies at the same time, which can aid this process, and all of that goes hand in hand. And where this meeting, this particular meeting, it was a launching pad or a launching point for other interaction, and I'm really excited about whatever data that I'm going to get from these guys or whatever they want to share, you know, to add to this thing. The main theme is I want to see, we want to see, the globe wants to see, the cosmos wants to see, the human species for the first time evolve.
Right, so they're encouraging collective awareness and a collective plan by humanity toward the rainforests and to sort of a transition from the permanent warfare economy into more of a cooperative with the rainforests as a pivotal project. This consciousness is starting to develop on a planetary basis as well. So it seems that what you're able to do is to act as a messenger, sort of back and forth between these specific civilizations and ourselves, with a great deal of specificity and also a great deal of correlation, because you seem to have been involved, as we were discussing, in an earlier project with a group of extraterrestrials who were simultaneously involved in a project with a human extraterrestrial liaison program with the U.S. government. So they are working with all parties. They're working with the rainforests. They're working with individual humans over multiple generations, and they're working with specific governments. And if specific governance, human governments, because of the individual frailties of certain leaders fall down, well, it looks like they have adaptive strategies. We've come to the end of this session, and our apologies, and we really want to ask you back, but this time has flown. We've been with Jim Sparks, author of The Keepers, and we ask you to visit his website, www.jim-sparks.com.
This is your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back after the break. What will grow crooked you can't make straight?
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm Alfred Weber. Well, it looks as though if there's one purpose to Exopolitics Radio, we can call it, as our creative director, R.V. Romero, says, destination awareness. Destination awareness. We have become even more aware in this program of the multidimensional universe, and that's a theme that we've been charting since our inaugural program on March 10th, 2007, right before the Phoenix Lights 10th anniversary, that we live in a multidimensional universe. We may be anchored in the third dimension, but there are parts of us in the fourth and parts of us in the fifth. And people like Jim Sparks and others, I mean, maybe even you and I, have been in the fifth dimension inside an extraterrestrial mothership anchored someplace. I mean, 33% of those who believe in extraterrestrial abductions have had an abduction experience or know someone who has had. Secondly, it's clear that there are most probably top secret U.S. government extraterrestrial human liaison programs that have access to very sophisticated advanced time travel teleportation technology as set out in these, you know, anthropological field reports on genuine outreach programs by this species of extraterrestrials. And it is very clear that that technology has been known as being used by sequestered units within the U.S. government and probably misapplied, I know, from research in many different other areas having to do with applications in political scenarios, including reports that even one former member of a U.S. cabinet, U.S. presidential cabinet, was carrying around one of these time travel machines. They are now portable for accessing past and future information. So there's a great deal of this exotic technology that is being used for political control or misused. So it is now vital, it is now absolutely vital that we have disclosure of these top secret extraterrestrial human liaison programs. And we have not known about them because billions of U.S. taxpayer funds have gone into very sophisticated disinformation and obfuscatory programs by the Central Intelligence Agency and other of the alphabet agencies since day one to make it appear as though there are no extraterrestrials, it's swamp gas. You know, if you get into it, you'll lose your job. You're a social disgrace. It's not respectable to think that there are. And that's all along so that they will have a monopoly on this technology to be able to use it for purposes of social control rather than for the benefit of the human race. It is clear that if we had things like time travel, teleportation technology, we could use it, you know, instead of these gas-polluting highways and fossil fuel internal combustion engine trucking systems. We could teleport each other from place to place. And that's probably what the futuristic world looked like, because we're probably going to have disclosure. And it's just been these last 60 years due to very narrow plutocratic private interests of the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization centered in the Rockefeller organizations, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Rockefeller Control Corporations, the Skull and Bones Network, whose secret name is the Order of Death, that have implemented this secrecy for the benefit of the defense industries, their own profits, and for the benefit of the $1.5 trillion black budget economy, all for military dominance, which is foolish in an open-ended universe. And so it is vital that we have disclosure for the world to change for the better into a world of fantastic technology and goodness, abundance, and creativity for all. Isn't that what the scriptures promise? And so we know that God never goes back on a promise. So we know that goodness in the end will win. So having said that, it is clear that the critical path to disclosure is, according to the extraterrestrials themselves, a truth amnesty process centered in Washington, D.C., probably along the lines they're using as a model, maybe, you know, starting with the South African truth amnesty process. So we now have all of those elements in place here on our Exopolitics radio program. Steve Bassett, our stalwart director of the Extraterrestrial Political Action Committee, will be on our season finale next week, Saturday, June 2nd, to tell us about the plan to bring together all of you with as many congresspeople and other good public servants and aides in Washington, D.C. in September of 2007 and again in April of 2008, along with the U.S. presidential candidates, all of whom will be invited, and there are more than 20 declared U.S. presidential candidates now. So get prepared to come to Washington, D.C., because it is extraterrestrial disclosure, forgiveness, public truth, and amnesty that will get the world to change for the better. The technology is there. It's been there for over 60 years. They're secret programs that are not a secret anymore. This is Exopolitics Radio, which is produced by Phoenix Productions in conjunction with 1480 KPHX Progressive Talk Phoenix and the Nova M Network. Executive producer Richard Romero Sr., director RV Romero, producer and editor Chris Romero. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and extraterrestrial teleportation technology-filled and amnesty-giving day, week, and life. Thank you.